participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, good morning. I am Rahel, and today Sonia is not feeling well, and she's at home. So I would like to wish Sonia a refuah shlema. May you feel better, have a speedy recovery, and hang in there. We'll see you next week. We'll have Sonia next week. Today, this morning, this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker Tov l'kol ha'mazinim and Tzoraim Tovim b'Yisrael from WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And you can hear us also on the internet at wsmnradio.com. Boker Tov, George. How's your Hebrew today?
Good. Never better. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Well, I think you got Boker Tov, right?
Hey, it's a start, right?
That's right. So, hey, we're looking out the window, and the winter has come back ferociously.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It's a beautiful snow,
yeah,
but turning into slush. So here we are in New Hampshire.
It'll be back to 40 tomorrow.
It'll be back to, I think, 50, actually, they said, 51. So it'll all be gone tomorrow. But, you know, take pictures while you can, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
Remember, the April Fool's snow.
Mother Nature pulling a prank on us.
Yeah.
I remember this happened, too, back when I was a sophomore in high school, back in 97. We had a big snowstorm April 1st. You remember that?
No, I don't. Actually, I was not here. I was in Israel that year.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
And then somebody had told me that it actually snowed in May many, many years ago.
I was actually there. I was out doing a gig in Wilton, and it was snowing and sleeting. And what it wasn't doing, I think it was like May 5th or 15th or something like that. It was horrible. We were under a tent outside fair, and it was snowing, and we were freezing.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, Rahel, actually, according to WMUR.com, there is a winter weather advisory in effect until 5:45 this evening. Until 8 o'clock this evening. Accumulations of snow are expected to be 3 to 6 inches from Nashua to Manchester. So it is slippery out there, so just be careful. Snow showers will be on and off until early this evening. So, again, be aware.
But we made it here.
Yeah, and you're here
by the way,
one piece. So
the Hebrew word for snow is shelig.
Shelig.
Shelig, yeah.
Sounds like a dessert or something.
Shelig, yeah. It is kind of like a dessert, isn't it?
Alex, you want some shelig?
We got Alex here. We got George here today. It's a party.
Yeah, absolutely. You never know what you're going to hear.
So I'm going to tell our listeners, besides shelig, our other Hebrew word for the day is, and by the way, if I'd like to tell our listeners that we are accepting sponsorship. If you'd like to sponsor a Hebrew word, for example, this is a good thing to do. Maybe the Torah portion. Maybe you want to advertise. Maybe you just want to simply sponsor us because we're doing such great work to keep us on the air. So do get in touch with us via our website, which is IsraelIsraelNH.com. IsraelIsraelNH.com. Sponsorship, advertising, it's not too expensive, actually, to spread the good news about Israel in this way. And in this way, you support Israel. So if you are pro-Israel and want to help us, that's something you can consider. So our Hebrew word for the day is divuach emet. It's actually two words, divuach emet. Divuach emet simply means reporting the truth or honest reporting. So with that, I'm going to introduce our first guest. We have two pre-recorded interviews today that were actually recorded some months ago, but I think they're still relevant today. Our first guest is Mr. Daniel Pipes. Daniel Pipes is one of the world's foremost analysts on the Middle East and Islam, and he's the director of the Middle East Forum, which is a nonprofit organization he founded in 1994, whose slogan is Promoting American Interests. He's a graduate of Harvard University with both a BA and a PhD in history. He's been recognized as one of Harvard's 100 most influential living graduates. He's held two presidential positions in the U.S. government. He's testified before many congressional committees, and he's worked for 5 presidential campaigns. In addition to all that, he's a prize-winning columnist, formerly for the New York Times Syndicate, and he's now writing independently for many newspapers. He's also the author of 12 books, and his writings have been translated into 33 languages. His website is danielpipes.org, and it's the most accessed website, one of the most accessed sources of specialized information on the Middle East and Islam. So this interview was recorded at a conference that Sonia and I attended that was put out by CAMRA, and we spoke with some CAMRA representatives last week, Dexter Van Zyl, who was a Christian media analyst. And the name of the conference was War by Other Means, the Global Campaign to Delegitimize Israel. Again, that was CAMRA.org. So we're going to hear right now an interview with Mr. Daniel Pipes.
The question is how and why the Jews are being regarded this way, and how we can get out from this vicious circle, because it's always about the Jews. Like, understand, again and again we are going after the Jews, and then we are saying, oh, we really made a great scene here. And the question is how we are taking ourselves out from this vicious circle.
Well, I'm not quite the person to ask about this. I'm a specialist on Muslims, not on Jews.
Okay.
But I'll give you an opinion anyway. I think the focus on Jews that goes back 2,000 years ultimately has to do with the unique Jewish role of being the precursor religion to both Christianity and Islam. So neither religion can look at Jews as just another people. Both them, especially Christians, but also Muslims, have a complex and some often difficult relationship with Jews. And that's the reason for this long, long story of special attention to this very small population.
Okay. I thought that it is a great fantasy which came alive time and again about Lawrence the Arabian.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes. Yeah. And it has something, a fantasy and a romantic thing. And the question is, can Israel could be a place of fantasy, but I mean a
romance.
Yes, but I mean a positive thing that should come out and to show the other nations that we are also living in desert, only that we made the desert flourishing. So what is your opinion?
I think Israel is bifurcated in the sense that there's a group of people that see it as an evil place, but there's also a significant group of people that sees it as a, I wouldn't say a fantasy, but as a miracle. And it is both Jews and Christians who see it this way. I mean, there are elements of both religion that have a special tie to Jerusalem, that think about it, to Israel in general and Jerusalem in particular, and that are very focused, that vote on the basis of policy towards Israel, and go visit it, or read about it, watch movies about it. So, that already exists. The trouble is, there's another element that is obsessed with Israel as a horrible place. But they both exist. It's not just one, it's both.
And the question is, I think that our Western civilization, it's going wrong from values point speaking. We just forgot what our values, and like the Western civilization do not want to fight anymore for their own good, for their own kids. And the question is, what shall we do?
Again, work on,
know,
on this line. But okay.
One of the
remarkable things about Western civilization is that it has developed its own enemies, in particular on the far right and the far left, the fascists and the communists, who come from within Western civilization but have turned against it and see Western civilization as evil. So these are fights that continue, that are not new. I mean, World War II, the Cold War, these were civil wars in the West, whether Western values are good or whether they're bad. Fascists and communists said they're bad. Now one has the Islamists coming from the outside and saying, well, the West is bad. And again, we have to ask ourselves, are they right or are they wrong? And I think it's critical that Westerners understand that their civilization is now in question in a new way. Not only are there Westerners who hate Western civilization, but there's this whole body of non-Westerners who also do. And so for me, the key is, do we understand? Are we willing to fight for our values or not? Are we indifferent or do we care? Is it the same to us whether we have the Constitution, or is it just fine if we replace it with the Quran? These are the major issues ahead. And while this is a remote issue in the United States, it's a quite vivid issue in much of Europe, in particular Britain, where the Sharia, the Islamic law, is now accepted as valid, as well as English historic common law.
I want to comment that, you know, in Israel we have Jewish halachic law, religious law, which is working in tandem with, you know, with the secular law. But in America, I'm going to ask you a question that's relevant to you, you're more relevant to your study, but as far as the Islam, the incoming of Islam now, how do you see that in the future? What does the future look like for America and the rest of the world? And also, I want to ask, what do you think is the importance of Israel in all of this?
Well, I see major battles ahead over the Sharia. Do we accept it or do we reject it? Are Muslims going to change the nature of life in the West, or are Muslims going to adapt to the way of life in the West? I'm not saying adapt 100%, but I mean, the reason why we have legislatures is because laws change, we adapt. But overwhelmingly, I think Muslims should adapt. They are coming into countries, and they have an obligation to adapt to the existing order, not come along and say, we have something better, and we want to impose it on you. Israel is on the front line in this. It's in itself not that big, powerful, important, but it is critical in the sense that battles are taking place, intellectual battles and military battles that are at the forefront of these issues.
Well, we used to, you know, Israel was sort of used to be looked at as a sideline and maybe used for various political entities to do what they will. Now it's really an American issue, this whole thing with Islam. And Israel is sort of becoming little, and it's almost as if Israel can just go ahead and live their life, you know, her life now. And now America needs to fight that battle. You know, how is America going to deal with this? What do you think, you know, how it looks now? I see many Americans sort of asleep at the wheel. Are they waking up? Is this dangerous? Are we looking at something dangerous? What, you know?
Interestingly, the divisions between Americans replicate those in the Cold War, and that the liberals tend to be casual about this, and the conservatives tend to be very distraught about it. So the question is, who will prevail finally? And I don't know. It's pretty evenly split. But I do think there is more movement of people who are not upset becoming upset. And so I'm reasonably optimistic that the conservative vision will prevail, in a sense that our values are important. This is a threat. We need to do something about it.
Right. I guess I needed to say that, you know, many Americans I don't think feel yet threatened. And we kind of do regard it as a threat. So
I think with time, the sense of threat will grow. As numbers grow, as Islamization takes place, if one looks at Europe, one can see that this is the dominant issue in many countries today. Take, for example, the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. The political discourse in the Netherlands is pretty much about Islam, immigration, Sharia, and the like.
Well, our whole vocabulary has changed here in America, and, you know, just using Arabic words and things like that, you know, we never thought that we'd be using that kind of vocabulary as part of ours. So I see that as already a creeping culture coming in that maybe we want and maybe
culture,
we don't.
But it's also knowledge. I mean, I can use words, as I am with you now, without really having to explain what they mean, jihad, Sharia, and so forth, that were
non-existent in our
obscure a decade ago. So yes, on the one hand, it does suggest that the presence of Islam is greater, but it also suggests that knowledge about Islam is greater.
And I know we're going to let you go. We said 10 minutes. I'm just curious that at one point, you know, many Jews would have come in from Europe after the war, and many Muslims have come in after the war, where once it was looked upon as favorable to adapt and become American, today it's not looked that way. It's where do you think that changed? Why has that changed?
I think Americans in particular and Westerners in general have lost their sense of confidence that they have something special, something worth preserving, and that weakness is potentially deadly. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a battle, as I said before, between those who do prize Western civilization, its accomplishments, and its benefits, against those who are indifferent to it. So those of us who do prize it must convince others, we must get a hold of the school curricula and the arts and the media and get these ideas across.
Do you think we have to fight harder than we are?
Sure.
We'll let you go.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to talking to you again in, I think it's the first week of November, I believe. So we're glad to meet you.
This is WSMN 1590. Nashua's News and Talk, and I am Rachel, and this is Israel is Real. Over 100,000 people hear our show locally, and millions hear it worldwide. So why not help spread the word and the good news about Israel by sponsoring a Hebrew word, maybe a Torah portion, make a donation in honor of a loved one, advertise, send us your text and we'll read it. And by supporting Israel is Real, you can make a difference. So write your check now to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. If you want to know more about rates and any other details, please visit our website at www.israelisraelnh.com. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? If you'd like to receive Vision's email alerts and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's NH with the number 4, Israel.org. nh4israel.org. The patent and trademark law firm of Vernmain and Associates a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main & Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or again on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com, vernmain.com. Dr. Jim Haas was a guest on our show, and he is of the Vanguard Dental Group in Derry, New Hampshire. He is board-certified pediatric dentist who specializes in treating children with special emotional and physical needs. He treats with sedation dentistry and operating room dentistry. He's extremely talented at putting anxious children at ease so they have a positive dental experience. Dr. Jim is currently accepting new patients and would love to help your child enjoy visiting the dentist. So call Dr. Jim Haas at 603-434-1586. You can also visit VanguardDentalGroup.com. That's one long word, VanguardDentalGroup.com, VanguardDentalGroup.com, to learn more about Dr. Jim Haas. Rachel is spreading beautiful music across the globe. So if you'd like to hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel, that's me, to perform live, and there is a show actually tonight at the Jam Factory in Manchester on Elm Street, jamfactorynh.com. So go there and come tonight and hear Rachel, rachelmusic.com or rachelmusic.net, R-A-H-E-L music.net. Again, this is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and this is Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel. And we're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. I am Rachel, and this is Israel is Real. Again, we'd like to wish Sonia a refuah shleima. She's out sick today. And this is the free voice for Israel. We're going to bring you another pre-recorded interview, and we are most honored to have our guest today, who is also himself a talk show host. And this is Mr. John Batchelor. He's an author, and he's the host of the John Batchelor Show radio news magazine, which I listen to every night from 10 to 1 here in New Hampshire. He's based at WABC Radio. John Batchelor hosts a daily show on WABC, which airs 7 days a week in New York City between 9 p.m. and 1 a.m., as I said, and in New Hampshire between 10 to 1, and in many major markets across the country. A podcast of the show is available at wabcradio.com. So we feel extremely fortunate to have had the opportunity to interview Mr. Batchelor about his love for Israel and about his steadfast commitment to factual reporting. That's divuach emet, honest reporting. So again, this is a pre-recorded interview with Mr. John Batchelor. Thank you. speaking to John Batchelor from The John Batchelor Show. And you'll let us know, our listeners, how to contact you and how to listen to you when we finish speaking, which will be really exciting. We wanted to start with our first question. We know that you are a professional in the media. You have years of experience. And we also know that you also have a very high respect and regard for Israel. So we wanted to know, in your opinion, does the media do Israel justice?
The long answer is no. And there are reasons for it that I've come to understand over these last 10 years.
Yes.
The chief reason is that education in the United States, especially for those who go into broadcast media, is lagging. International affairs has always been left out of the curriculum. History is not strong. And so the attention that Israel deserves requires both a very keen historical understanding of the 20th century and perhaps the last 2,000 years, but certainly the events of the 1940s after the Second War. And it also requires what you'd have to say is a sophisticated understanding of the relationship between the United States and Israel. It's not about vote-getting. It's about an alliance that has proved extremely fruitful to both parties and the alliance in the world of the 21st century.
I thought if I would bring here only the MiG-21 that the United States get from Israel, and it was the hoo-ha, the something. It was such a big deal to have this airplane and to understand what the Russian did with this airplane. And not only this, I can bring more and more and more documentation about.
Well, we wanted to ask, for example, you mentioned that, you know, it's a matter of awareness and education, where Israel is very much squelched in the world news, in the media, and not talked about, and which is why we like your show so much, because you do give a lot of time to Israel and to Israeli representation and to the Jews. And so you've kind of cited where the source maybe came from. How do you think the media could help to improve Israel's image?
I think that what Israel does right now for itself is well-spoken. In other words, if you pursue the facts relentlessly, you will be rewarded because you're transparent. Let's use an example, an historical example. Last June 1st, I was on the air when news came from Israel Army Radio, and then via many sources in the Middle East, finally flowing through to Europe, of the conflict that was at that time called the Gaza blockade. You recall the incident. It was a provocation mounted by what you'd have to say were sinister Turkish hands launching a media extravaganza that was featured immediately in Europe as persecution by the Jews and intervention and brutality by the usual suspects, you know, the Mossad, all the usual conspiratorial stories. Well, that went around the world very quickly because it was based on lies, falsehoods, and propaganda. Israel's investigation of those events took some time, took some days, and some of it is still going on. However, because I report on the news, it strengthens me a great deal to be able to go over these facts without making emotional assertions and problematical statements. I can submit to anyone my understanding of that incident of June 1st, which I reported live on air at the time. I talked to my colleague, Malcolm Honlein. I called him up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm was watching as well with news out of Israel. And, of course, it's a seven-hour time gap, so we had to deal with the fact that this was going on early in the morning in the Eastern Mediterranean. We were late at night in New York. But we did get the story out, and I use this example, and we could multiply it endlessly, as a way of demonstrating that a country as Israel is, and as the United States is, that is committed to facts and transparency and good history, is always going to prevail, in no matter who the audience is.
Today there seems to be a massive movement of delegitimize Israel as a sovereign state. And this has placed Israel's and the Jews there, we suggest, even the world, at a great danger.
Yes.
Is there hope that the media can somehow help to turn this movement around? Do you have any suggestion?
Two responses. The first is, Bibi Netanyahu doesn't need my help. He's very well equipped to handle the story, along with his cabinet and his friends. Very well equipped. I talk to many of them all the time. Really, when Carl Levin and Shelley Berkley are your friends in the Democratic Party, and when you have Ross Letsonen, head of foreign affairs in the House, on your side from the Republican Party, you don't need a whole lot of help from the media. However, let's go to the media part. The story about what is called lawfare, or the attempt to assert falsehoods at the United Nations, is a story that is still being told. It's in other words, you're at the front line knowing about it. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to talk about. It's not easy to understand. So we'll tell the particulars over these next weeks. Here in the new year, we hear from various countries in South America, for example. I think I heard Uruguay mentioned the other night as yet another one that wants to play this game of endorsing or in some way embracing the Palestinian Authority as if it was a sovereign state.
Right.
Well, that nonsense.
Right.
Well, those facts can go forward, and I will enjoy the contest. I think we all can enjoy the contest because I understand the history and the meaning of the facts, and I also understand that the Palestinian Authority speaks with no legitimacy, no sovereignty. Mahmoud Abbas is afraid of holding an election because he'll lose to the terrorists in Gaza, and the friends of the Palestinians in Europe are afraid of the facts. Always when I broadcast, I'm aware that if I'm not afraid of the facts are good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I know. And they're afraid of the facts. That means that their facts are bad. And let's get it out. Let's not have people come to understanding. You know, I'm not Jewish. So what I know about the persecution of Jews, I get from reading, mostly. From my friends, not so much, because I don't know any persecuted Jews. I know some very successful ones. And when I've been to Israel, I don't meet any persecuted Jews. I meet some very sophisticated Israelis. However, in the history books and the stories we all grew up with, I read how persecution worked. And mostly it was understanding, you know, winks. People didn't say things. They understood things. And what I have learned is that if you immediately confront the assumption that Israel or the Jews are wrong, if you immediately confront it and talk about it, it goes away.
I was looking at some of our questions, and I was just thinking, you know, as you're mentioning this, you know, where we think of how, you know, Egypt is accusing Israel of having control over sharks, and now Saudi Arabia having...
Oh, wasn't that a wonderful story? The Mossad sharks. You know,
right.
The robot sharks that the Mossad worked on.
Well, now we have Mossad vultures in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And, you know, you'd think that Israel is really is some kind of a superpower, but, you know, but yet everybody wants to destroy Israel. So what is it that they want to destroy? What is it?
Well, I've been told that the way it works in the Arab world, the Ummah, is that they have, that those countries collectively enjoy such rotten governance and are such an embarrassment to their intellectuals that they've learned to play the Jewish card or the Israeli card to stop the conversation. So every time I see them play the Jew card, you know, it's the Mossad with electronic or robot sharks or vultures, I know that they've got problems. They're talking about themselves. Egypt, they got big problems with the Coptics. That's what that attack on the church was in Alexandria and the riots in the streets.
Right.
They got big problems with the Muslim Brothers. That's why Mubarak, who cannot find a succession plan that anybody agrees to, mostly hides out and makes friends with the powerful of the world because Egypt is in trouble. So whenever I hear that nonsense, it's like those old urban legends when they started talking about the Passover and foreskins, all that nonsense, right? You know that the sickness has taken a hold of the speaker and that you need to wait them out. I add to myself, anybody use that nonsense on the air is weak, and I stop talking.
Well, I would like to say that, you know, you are very educated and make it a point to remain aware and seek out the facts, whereas many people who are listening to a lot of the propaganda, they really believe the propaganda. How are we going to change this around so that they're not hearing and believing the propaganda anymore, that they're actually thinking like you? You know, an intelligent person with an intelligent mind who knows that, you know, no one is sending out electronic sharks.
Right, right. I think that you start locally. You start right away, and that's what I do. It's all what we can do as broadcasters. I have this community here. You might, you know, you might say it's not small, New York City. And I have a radio show that speaks directly to the facts each evening. And when the facts are about Israel, we speak to them and we go looking for them. I gave the example of the Gaza blockade.
Mm-hmm.
And my audience, it recognizes that the issues are not simple. They're not going to be solved by slogans and slurs. And that's enough. That's the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
You can't read for people. They've got to read for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we raise questions that their slurs and smears or those that they hear don't answer, they'll be curious. I take them on faith. I think people are very smart, and I think they have a sense, like a tick, when they know they're being lied to, and yet it'll buzz by you unless somebody comes along and says, oh, by the way, how'd you like being lied to last night? That irritates people, and then they'll pay attention.
Good line. You'll let us know. I know your time is short. We're going to keep asking until
you've got
a few
more minutes. Yes,
okay.
I'm fine. Let me tell you what I'm about to do. I'm going to talk to Brett Stevens, who writes the Global View column for the Wall Street Journal. And this week he's writing about Egypt. Brett spent about a year there as a younger man. You remember he was the editor of the Jerusalem Post for a number of years. Well, now he writes Global View for the Wall Street Journal. He's a member of the editorial board. And tonight we're going to talk about Egypt and the issue you brought up about the electronic sharks and blaming Mossad and that sort of thing. So it's right inside the freshest news about what to do with Egypt's current leaders and their obsessions.
Well, we'll be listening to that one. We have one more question then,
sure.
If you don't mind.
The Jews have a history of standing up for the civil and the human rights. And many Americans did it in the 60s, marching together with Martin Luther King. And still now, Israel and the Jews are always portrayed as violators of the human and the civil rights.
Well, you know, that's a funny matter, because the facts don't support that conclusion. My reading of Jewish history, modern Jewish history, I don't want to go back to the really great stuff, the Bible, but the modern Jewish history, since the Enlightenment, since the 18th century,
mm-hmm.
is that the Jews in America have collected towards the most progressive kind of politics. They're very conservative people, very conservative fathers and mothers, take care of their family, educate their children, and quite easy to scold people who misbehave, you know, gambling, all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, a great deal of sympathy towards human rights. I'll use an historical example again instead of using generalities. Who led the confrontation with the Soviet bosses in the 1970s and 1980s? Who took the most risk? Who sacrificed the most? It was the people known as refuseniks, and we know who they were. They were the Jews.
Right.
Okay. Now, not alone did the Jews bring down the Soviet monster.
Right.
But they were a major media factor, and they gave a handhold to the United States. And our media then had a way in to talk about Sakharov, to talk about the sacrifices of the Jews and those who were being persecuted by sent to Siberia because they didn't want to hear about them. So there alone is a good example of Jews and human rights working in concert with the United States and Europe to free the world of a monster. We, you know, it's all gone now. The Soviets, who remembers? It's a joke, right?
Yeah.
They were monsters.
Right, and we have
and
a new
the
monster.
Jews, the few Jews who were available, the most intellectual, the ones who had the most to lose, Sakharov, he was a feted member of the communist elite, took that risk. Good for them. And that model alone, I think, is inspirational. It would be if you were telling it to anybody who had never heard of it.
And we say that, you know, Benjamin Disraeli said that England didn't have eternal friends, but that she had eternal interests. So, you know, the question is, I'm kind of wondering, when will Israel be regarded basically as a country just like any other country, or will we always be special?
I don't know the answer to that, but I've often joked to my friends that Israel only needs one friend, only one, right? And that makes everybody else a liar. And right now, it's got a really good friend with hangs around with an eagle, It's had that friend for about 70 years. And I don't see any weakness. So because that's true, how much, I ask this question because I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the anti-Zionist, anti-Israeli, you know, all the smears, how much of that is beating up on Israel because they're afraid of the United States because they can't get at the big guy with the eagle?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, yeah. Is Israel's friendship with the United States the reason Israel's so disregarded?
That's an interesting question and an interesting perspective. We'll have to follow that. And if I could just keep you for another second, and I know that this is a big question and can't be answered really in a second, but in a nutshell, can you explain to our listeners what is this new term, lawfare?
Lawfare is using the instruments of civil society. The United Nations is an example of that, or the International, the IMF, or the World Bank, or the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Using those instruments in a perverted fashion in order to advance the case of terror or disunion or hate. That's lawfare. And these examples, so let's give the example of the International Criminal Court or the example of using various antique British laws to try to arrest an Israeli official when he or she lands in London.
Mm-hmm.
That's lawfare.
Right.
It's clearly a perversion, but because it's a talking point, it's used by the enemy, the adversaries of the United States and Israel, in order to command headlines. And it's nonsense, but it needs to be answered directly.
Thank you. John, we know that you have, as we said, you said yourself you're not Jewish, but you have an Israel that your heart knows and your eyes see. What brought you there?
I was given the opportunity to go right in the middle of a battle. I missed war. I didn't join up in Vietnam because of the politics of my youth. And when Malcolm Hoenlein invited me to go with him into Israel in 2003, right during the first of the fighting in Bethlehem and Ramallah, you will all recall that with Ariel Sharon taking on Yasser Arafat, the all of that. Malcolm took me with him, and on the first day we got in a cab and we ran right into Bethlehem, right into the battlefield around the siege of the siege of Bethlehem when everything was a wreck. And that was my introduction. I didn't go there as a tourist. I went there with a flak jacket on, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it because I could tell that I could tell who the bad guys were, I could tell who the good guys were, and I knew what side I was on.
Well, bless you, Livriyut. John, we'll let you go. Just if you don't, we'll tell our listeners, but if they could hear it from you, we want to encourage our listeners to listen to your show.
Sure.
And how can they do that?
WABC in New York, but in many other stations across the country. And the best way to get it, I broadcast every night, 7 days a week, from 9 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern, is WABCradio.com. Has the podcast the next morning, so you can download it easily and listen to any part you want. Thursday night is in a special interest to those who support Israel because we spend 2 hours of the show devoted entirely to issues that are of concern, risk to Israel. And with my colleague Malcolm Hoenlein. And now, if you'll forgive me, I'll run off to my colleague Brett Stevens, and I thank you both very much. And
thank
I wish you.
Thank you. Thank you. Please tell Bye. Brett we would like to be in touch with him as well. Take care.
Bye.
Good day.
This is Israel is Real, and we're broadcasting from WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And I am Rachel. And again, Sonia, we wish you a refuah shleima, and we will see you next week. So this has been really great. We had a chance to speak with Daniel Pipes and also with John Batchelor, two well-respected, brilliant, brilliant people. And that was really exciting to be able to have that opportunity. I'd like to read you today's Torah portion. And today's Torah portion is coming from, it's Parshat Tazria. So as the Jewish nation seems to perhaps still be wandering in the desert, in Galut, who can offer us spiritual guidance during our current wanderings? Until the time when the temple will again stand, we are unable to consult the Kohanim, also known as the high spiritual priests or leaders. Instead, the Hasidic masters teach us that our rabbis take the place of the Kohanim. The great rabbis are those who live exemplary lives based on the Torah. When choosing a rabbi, it's very important to choose someone who actually practices what he preaches. Who would go to an obese dietitian or an imprisoned attorney? Similarly, let us take the following example. There was an airline mechanic who worked for airline A, yet insisted on flying on airline B because he didn't find that airline A was safe. No one in their right mind would fly on airline A if even its own mechanics didn't want to fly on it. In regards to our rabbis, the same is true. Our spiritual health is so important that we have to be very careful with whom we trust our spiritual lives. Therefore, if we really want to take off spiritually, we must choose our rabbis wisely. Consulting with the right spiritual leader can be the key to living happier lives. This idea is hinted to in the Torah with the Kohanim. We know that one of the most important of the Kohen Gadol's vestments was the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim served as a prophetic guide to Israel. The Urim V'Tumim was a great source of happiness to the Bnei Israel, the Israelites, because these vestments guided the Jews during some of the most difficult times. As the sages teach us, there is no happiness like the happiness of resolving doubt. Thus, the Kohanim brought happiness to the nation through their spiritual guidance. So too, by turning to our spiritual leaders, we will have more clarity in life and consequently live happier lives. And with that, I'd like to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom. And again, remind you that we are Rachel and Sonia. And this is Israel is Real. Our theme song, Hine Matov, is by myself, Rachel, which you can find at www.rahelmusic.net. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning, on Radio WSMN, 1590 AM, Nashua's News and Talk. And I want to thank, first of all, let's thank George. Give George a hand today.
Thank you.
For his expertise. He's really been doing a great job. He's been with us all this time since we started. And we really appreciate George being here. I want to thank Alex for hanging in there today with us.
Thank you.
Say that again. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I hope Sonia feels better.
And we wish Sonia, yeah, exactly. And she'll be back next week. Mr. Daniel Pipes can be found at danielpipes.org. That's danielpipes.org. Mr. John Batchelor can be heard every night, 10 to 1, on 96.9 Radio FM, and also on WABC Radio. Just go there, wabcradio.com, to find out his hours of broadcast. Well worth it. Well worth it. And what else can I tell you? Just to tell you that over 100,000 people are hearing our show locally and millions are hearing it worldwide. So consider spreading the good news about Israel and supporting Israel is Real. Support a Hebrew word, a Torah portion, make a donation in honor of a loved one, advertise. And by supporting Israel, you are making a huge difference in the support for Israel, broadcasting the real news about Israel. So, enjoy the music. This is, again, Israel is Real. And Shabbat Shalom. Shevet Achim Gam Yachad.